Hello and welcome to Living the Gospel of Life. I'm Brian Gibson, Executive Director for Pro-Life Action Ministries.
And I'm Angela Erickson, a podcaster and writer.
Board member,
yeah. I do a few things.
General activist.
Yes.
Yes, there's lots of things we could add to that line for you. That's
That's
just too easy.
It'd be nice
short.
If we could come up with the
amazing Catholic wife and mom. Amazing Catholic wife and mom. There we go.
I don't know about amazing, but we could say Catholic wife and mom.
I think dragging all your kids out to a rally in front of a courthouse praying for the U.S. Supreme Court as they were hearing oral arguments on this Dobbs case on a cold December morning, I think that's amazing. I'll put that in the amazing category. Mm. You know.
Oh, thanks.
And then being able to give a talk while your son is screaming in my arms the whole time, I think that's amazing.
Yeah. It could be amazing or crazy. Depends on who you ask, probably.
Maybe
a little bit of both.
Well, I'll put it in amazing because I could be put in the crazy category very quickly, too. Well, hey, we've got a lot of stuff to cover on this very first day of the new year. Welcome to January 2022, everyone. Of course, today is also the Feast of Our Lady, and we're in the last day of the octave of Christmas, and the Christmas season begins from there. The very shortened Christmas season begins from there. We had the longest, well, actually the second longest Advent we can have. Next year we'll have the very longest we can have, getting the four full weeks complete before we get to Christmas. But unfortunately, that means the Christmas season after Advent is shortened up, so we're a little short on that this year. But Merry Christmas also, while we're at it.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, we've got a lot of stuff to cover, as I said, and the first thing is, we're mourning the loss of a very good friend in the pro-life movement. Sue Thayer passed away a little more than a week ago now. And she died from a very aggressive, very rare cancer. Sue, I had used for more than 17 years. She was the director of a Planned Parenthood affiliate clinic, or a Planned Parenthood satellite clinic, as I call them, in Storm Lake, Iowa. And these are the clinics where they don't actually commit abortions directly out of, but they dispense contraception and they teach the young people how to engage in all sorts of illicit sexual behavior and perversities and so forth. And she ran one of these clinics for more than 17 years before she had this very powerful conversion that happened. And part of the conversion included the Planned Parenthood director for the Iowa Planned Parenthood telling her that they were going to have to start doing abortions out of her location. And that was kind of like the final straw that caused her to quit, to leave. And then she came back the next year and started doing 40 Days for Life campaigns in front of that very same clinic that she worked at for more than 17 years. Within a couple years, that clinic closed permanently. And so Sue then continued to do work in the pro-life movement around the country. A couple years ago, she ended up taking a position with 40 Days for Life National, and that was the job that she was in when she found out August, I think, of this past year that she had this cancer. And really sorry to hear that she has passed away, but we certainly pray for her soul, and we look forward to her praying for us as she goes before God. So God bless you, Sue, for that conversion and for your good work after that conversion, your dedication to life. Mm-hmm. So very, very big thing there. Hey, Sarah Stays, this is a name that most people don't know even here in Minnesota, but Sarah Stays for the past almost 20 years has been the CEO and president of Planned Parenthood in Minnesota. Now, when she took over the reins 20 years ago, Planned Parenthood. I think it was Planned Parenthood of Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota at the time. And since during that 10-year, she also added Nebraska and Iowa, consuming those to make Planned Parenthood, headquartered out of St. Paul, Minnesota, one of the larger affiliates in the United States, covering five states. And not only that, they built the mega facility on Vandalia Street in St. Paul. And she is stepping down as the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood in October. So later this year, she's going to be stepping down. Now, the St. Paul Pioneer Press newspaper had a puff piece article on her. It was like a propaganda article on her. And it was like they took the press release sent out by Planned Parenthood and just basically wrote their article from the ridiculous things that Planned Parenthood said. So one of the things they talked about is how Sarah grew Planned Parenthood. And of course, when they talked about Sarah growing Planned Parenthood, they were talking about all these great services that Planned Parenthood does, blah, blah, blah. Well, here's what grew under Sarah: the number of abortions they do every year. And they've grown dramatically. In 2001-ish, when she first took over as the CEO and president of Planned Parenthood in Minnesota, Minnesota Planned Parenthood was doing fewer than 2,500 abortions a year, or somewhere in that range on a regular basis. Last year, in 2020, they did 5,000 more abortions in 2020 than they did in 2001. She tripled the number of abortions do a year. Yeah, so that's what she grew during these years. In fact, Planned Parenthood of Minnesota has actually had a decrease in the so-called other services that they do, you know, the contraception and everything else. Their increase has been abortions. And by the time she leaves in October, it will exceed 100,000 abortions done during her years there. There's a number to really ponder. It will exceed 100,000 abortions during her time there. So pray for Sarah Stays. Pray for her. Pray for her soul. Pray for her conversion. Yes, she's stepping down, but she's proud of the work she's done, according to the press release. And it's absolutely evil and horrible, the work that she's been doing for all these years. So she definitely needs those prayers, and she needs to come to know Christ and by the time she leaves, and leave immediately, quit right now would be a great thing, instead of waiting till October, and leave Planned Parenthood in a lurch in the process would be the better thing to do. But that's what's going on with them right now. So as we look back, Angela, over the past year, because now we're starting this new year, you know, everybody has this tendency to look back and see where things were at in the last year. You know, we were able to document another 59 babies saved in 2021. And wow. There might be a couple more stories that come in now that we've gotten to the new year. They're still from last year, so that number may go up a little bit. But as of right now, it's 59 that we've documented saved. And that's not all the babies that have been saved by our work out at the abortion mills. You know, we know that other babies are saved that we just don't fit our criteria to document. And there's the reality that when we're out there, we know that women will not go. Some women just simply don't go to their abortion appointments. They cancel them. They see us out there and they drive on and don't come. And they don't have their abortion, and we can't count any of them. We don't know who they are. But that happens, and that happens with some regularity. There have even been some statistics thrown out over the years by Planned Parenthood employees while still working for Planned Parenthood that no-show rate can be rather substantial. And so we're out there every day. We got people out there praying every day. We got people out there sidewalk counseling every day. So the likelihood that there are many more babies being saved than we're able to document is extraordinarily high. And we just praise God for every life that we've had an opportunity to reach out and save. So very good year. Amen. As far as that goes. Well, we have we have this United States Supreme Court thing going on right now. And the course
what?
Of
what? What are you talking about?
Well, this Dobbs case, I think they call it out of Mississippi.
Mm.
This case that the justices, they probably have already voted their positions on how this is going to go. And what they would be doing right about now is starting to figure out who's going to write what portion of what decision. So you're going to have a majority opinion, you're going to have a minority opinion, and then there may be some other concurring in part opinions and so forth. So there's going to be all this going on, and all that writing probably will be starting to take place after a week or two, as they get back into full session and running again after the Christmas break. Now there is still the possibility that they're still lining up and they still haven't made a final vote, and that could still be taking place during the month of January. But by the end of the month of January, this stuff's going to be pretty well sorted out. Papers are going to be pretty well written, if not completed. And then it's just waiting for the decision to be released to the public. So all that's going on. And so we have several things happening. We've got the pro-abortion people are just freaking out over this, quite frankly. They're all over the board and trying to deal with this. Some of it is, I don't think they know what to do to deal with it. I don't think they had actually planned for it to come to this point at this
really?
Time.
Interesting.
I really do.
I mean, that kind of surprises me. Why do you feel that way? I'd be curious to know your thoughts.
Because there's no coordinated response.
I understanding that it's somewhat speculative. That's
right.
That's true.
I mean, that's right. What I'm basing it on. The lack of a coordinated response. You know, when...
Yeah, they're known for being very, very coordinated and working together right. publicly.
And I think...
Very well,
I
yeah.
think the thing that really threw them, even more than this case, was what Texas did. Because that seemed to come completely yes. out of left field for everybody, right? And so yeah. the Texas law... Not that it was written and became law, because that was written a while back and it was signed into law, you know, to take effect, you know, when it did this past summer. So they knew the law was there. They knew it had been passed. They knew the governor was going to sign it into law. So they saw it coming. But I think they assumed it would be stopped by the federal courts immediately. It would be enjoined,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and that it would not be allowed to take effect, and that it was so blatantly contradictory to Roe versus Wade that they just assumed, hey, this is just another one of those state laws being thrown at us that really is meaningless because it's never going to go anywhere. But it has, and it's been in effect for months now, and lives yeah. are being saved every day, and the federal courts have
Praise
not
God.
Stopped it, and it's still there, and so forth, and we've covered it a lot. Add to that the Dobbs case and how the oral arguments went and the questions that were being asked by the justices, and now I think they're sitting there going, their jaws have dropped a little bit. And their mouths are hanging open a little bit. And I think they're still shaking their heads, trying to figure out what it is their next steps are going to be. But this has been very interesting to watch and to see. So the real question comes up, will Roe v. Wade really be overturned? And that still remains the big question. And we can't answer that. We don't know. We can speculate. Pro-abortion people yeah. are speculating. They're starting to talk as if it's a foregone conclusion that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned. Many pro-lifers are talking that way as well. But I'm hopeful that it can and that it may happen more
yeah.
so than ever before. But I won't say it's going to be overturned. You know, I won't predict that because we've been
yeah.
wrong too often as well. And you never know what they're
well,
going
to do. And two, even if the pro-abortion side is saying it, I mean, it's a great fundraising tactic.
Well, yeah, they're raising a lot of money off that. There's no doubt about
yeah.
that.
So, yeah. I mean, there's definitely the fear component for people who worship at the altar of abortion, yeah. you know? So I wouldn't even take, for me, I don't take much stock in how much they're freaking out because I'm sure some of them are legitimately nervous about it, but I think I'm more in line with you of just, we're going to wait and see. I'm not going to make a determination or pronouncement quite yet because I think we've been wrong too many times. Right. In the past.
But we do have to. I think we absolutely have to. As Minnesotans in particular, we have a duty right now to recognize that it is a possibility and may even be a probability that Roe v. Wade will be overturned when looking at what we're going to do in the coming days and in the future, in the year ahead, in the year after that ahead. And what I mean by that is should Roe v. Wade be overturned, what happens in Minnesota? And I know we've talked about this already a little bit, and the reality, the harsh reality is Minnesota is a state that will continue to kill unborn babies after Roe v. Wade is overturned, while almost every state surrounding us, it will become illegal. North Dakota, South mm-hmm. Dakota both have trigger yeah. laws. Wisconsin's 1849 law against abortion takes effect, comes back into existence as soon as Roe v. Wade is overturned. Wow. Unfortunately,
Minnesota. Well, and that will make Minnesota a destination state.
Yes, as they're calling a destination or abortion mecca, however you want to call it.
It's so weird because it sounds like a destination vacation and it's so far from.
Yeah. Well, so we know that the effort will be to draw women to come from these neighboring states in particular and even further. I know actually right now there are efforts by some of the abortion organizations to draw women from Texas to come up here for their abortions.
Wow.
So, you know, it's not far-fetched to think that they'll be reaching out to Missouri and Nebraska and, of course, North and South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and beyond, and just encouraging women to come here for their abortions once Roe v. Wade is overturned. And, you know, what is our hope of changing our state is the next question is what can we do? What's effective? Well, there's this huge obstacle in our way, and it's called the Doe v. Gomez case from 1995. It's a state Supreme Court decision in which the Minnesota Supreme Court falsely ruled that there was some sort of inherent right to abortion in the state constitution. It was a state that had one of the strongest anti-abortion laws for more than 100 years that decided this the constitution was right all those years, but now it was wrong. Anyhow, so the state Supreme Court made this ruling, and in that process, they ruled that if the state pays for prenatal care for poor women, for women who are on assistance, then we also had to pay for their abortions. And we've been doing that ever since. Our Minnesota state tax dollars have been paying for thousands of abortions over these years. And so, you know, how do we pass laws that overcome this Doe v. Gomez thing so that we can then actually start the work toward outlawing all abortions? But it gets worse than that. I'm going to be a bearer of great good news here at some point, I hope. But right now it's bad news, and there is a court case that's been working through the court system for more than a year now. And it's being handled by an organization called Gender Justice. And the lawsuit has been brought against virtually all pro-life laws that have been on the books in Minnesota going as far back as 1974. And they are seeking to have them all found unconstitutional based on this Doe v. Gomez case from 1995. And it's still stuck in the Hennepin County courts the Ramsey County courts where it started. It's still in the courts there before Judge Gilligan. And, you know, at one point, Pro-Life Action Ministries intervened or tried to intervene, and we ended up getting told we are not allowed to intervene. That went all the way to the state Supreme Court to get that decision. But it's still sitting there in the courts, and there's a growing body of people, legal minds, who believe that it is basically a foregone conclusion that when all the dust is settled on this case, they go through all their appeals, they get through the state Supreme Court, it's going to be found that all of our pro-life laws are unconstitutional and that we can't have any laws that would regulate abortion.
Oh my goodness.
That's
what do we do?
Well, first of all, you know, if you don't recognize the problem, you can't even figure out what to do. That's the first thing. And right. So, elections have serious consequences, that's the first thing. And if we're voting for people, or if we're talking to friends and neighbors and family, and they're voting for people who believe that it's okay to kill unborn children, you're wrong. Don't you dare vote that way. We need to start.
I don't even care what their economic policy is. Yeah, you know what I mean?
We better start getting really good at this, and we better start getting very strong and clear and bold. We need to be able to talk about these things again. Us who are pro-life, who are committed to making sure that pro-life people are put into office so that eventually we can stop the killing of innocent human beings in this state, well, then we better start being bold about talking to everybody else who may think otherwise. Another part of this package of what we need to do is we need to start spreading the word about the scientific reality of human life and what abortion really is, and the killing of an innocent human being, broader and not just within the churches. And I'm speaking of Pro-Life Action Ministries when I say that myself. You know, we have done a lot of good work over the years by putting a lot of attention on calling out Christians to be active and involved, which we still need to keep doing. There's no doubt about that, because there's not enough Christians coming out doing what they should do. But we also got to reach the secular society out there. We got to start moving the hearts and minds of people all over the whole state to start recognizing this. And I think this is where there is some really good hope right now, because we're finding that young people, those that are college age and post-college age people out there, that they are more pro-life by polling, by percentages, than my generation was, and the generation in between us have been. So, they're, even though they may be less religious and they may be less likely to identify as being a Christian, and so forth, they're more secularized than ever before. They're more pro-life than ever before, and there's room to grow that. There's room to make that difference, and so. So that's another area where we have to start working very hard at is reaching out way beyond our normal boundaries and reach out there widely. And we need to reach with a new message, a better message, a message that has staying power for those very people that we're trying to reach out to. So that's our initial response.
I kind of think alongside that, while the biology and scientific component is extremely important in this discussion, I do think a lot of young people, they know that it's a human life, and I don't think that bothers them so much, to be honest. I feel like, I mean, just look at this gender justice. Young people are very concerned about justice and freedom, and I think so much of this conversation rests on this notion of bodily autonomy for so many young people, believing that they're quote-unquote right to have control over their body without any sort of limitation or restriction is superior to that of the right of the child. And so I do think, too, we have to become apologists on behalf of the unborn and really become familiar with the philosophical implications of the pro-choice argument, pro-abortion argument, so that we can really get people to think more seriously about their kind of the premises or conclusions that they have, the things that they assume to be true, because they're not challenged intellectually enough to question whether or not their beliefs are in fact consistent, or rational. So I just wanted to add that in there, because I feel like sometimes that gets lost in the conversation. And for every young person I talk to, that is the primary reason they support abortion.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. But you know, in their philosophical argument, they end up having to ignore the very thing that they claim they hold on to, and that's science.
Exactly.
So getting them to make that very logical step instead of the huge philosophical leap that they make the logical short, right, simple step that a human life, yes, is a human life is a human life, and therefore we must, you know, if we don't uphold the dignity of all human beings, we do harm to all human beings, including ourselves.
Yep.
So that, yeah, you're right. That's very, very, very important in there. So a lot with that is going on, and back to this whole thing with the possibility of Roe v. Wade being overturned again. The radical pro-abortion left is pushing hard now. We've got Democrat U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal, who is urging the United States Senate to end its filibuster so they can pass national pro-abortion legislation, virtually eliminating all pro-life laws in every state in the country and making abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason whatsoever, no reason whatsoever, the law of the land. And so,
why is it that every 4 years or under different administrations, one minute, you know, the left is very comfortable with the filibuster, and the next, they're very uncomfortable with this process?
Well,
I know it's very frustrating.
Well, I wouldn't say, you know, it's easy to say the left, because I think the right can be very uncomfortable with the filibuster too.
Absolutely.
You know, it's, you know, are you getting what you want? And if you're not getting what you want, you get uncomfortable with it.
I know, frustrating. Yeah, it's like, because most of these people have been in office forever.
Yeah. Well,
this
extreme push that's coming from the Democrat Party is starting to harm them. And this is where it's starting to harm them. Latinos are starting to abandon the Democrat Party in record numbers. They're moving to start voting for Republicans because of this extremity, especially with the abortion issue. And we're seeing more and more of that happening right now, where they're identifying in a completely different direction than has been the ongoing support. So here's one of the Wall Street Journal had a poll, and the question was posed before them with regard to the upcoming 2022 congressional elections. And they're showing that a large number of Hispanics are looking to vote GOP. Vote Democrat or Republican instead. A hypothetical 2024 Joe Biden Donald Trump rematch is put before them, and they're showing that it's an almost dead tie between the two possible candidates, the hypothetical candidates, where in 2020 Biden won more than by 25 points in the Latino community. So that's a huge swing that has taken place here. So we see that their extremism can backfire, and seems to be starting to backfire. So we probably have time just for one more article here to talk about, and that is Maria Stopes, which is an abortion facility out of Australia, has admitted that over 5% of abortion pill abortions provides to fail a complete abortion, meaning that 1 in 20 women have remains of the aborted baby still within her after having a chemical abortion. Another one of the terrible side effects of this nasty abortion pill, which currently the FDA is allowing to be mail ordered and sent out.
Yes.
Sent out wherever. You know, so it's again,
right? Which, yeah,
yeah. This one is.
This
just
means that there's a risk of infection, so these women can be really harmed.
Yeah, the complication factor is much higher than surgical abortion, which is amazing to me, because when we're talking about abortion surgery, we're talking about blind surgery. You know, the doctor can't see what they're doing. So, but it's all the time we have today. Thank you, and God bless you.